With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
No big deal last night for the Astros. 9-2, they beat the Red Sox. Seven runs in the top of the ninth. The big hit, Jason Castro, base hit to put the Astros up 3-2 in that game. They would go on attack on six more runs, all with two outs. They win the game. Series tied at 2. Game 5 today, 4 o'clock. We'll all be out at Kirby Ice House, so come hang out with us. Clint Sterner and the show will be out there. It's going to be a lot of fun. We were there for an afternoon game during the ALDS, and we had a blast. So hope to see you guys out there. Steak night, too, by the way, at Kirby Ice House. So the bullpen, though, to me, Seth, in addition to Castro, the bullpen, the big story, 7 2/3 innings of relief last night, no runs, a few walks, 10 strikeouts, just 4 hits. Again, this is a slew of guys coming in, highlighted by Christian Javier giving you 3 innings, a slew of guys coming in and doing the job. Here was Dusty Baker last night on the Astros bullpen.
Javier, you know, the job that he did, that was a great job. He just ran it. We took him as far as we could. He ran out of gas there and went to Graveman. You know, the great job by, you know, by Rayleigh. You know, just a great job overall, you know, by the whole team. It was a huge win, you know, to tie that up, to guarantee us to go back home and have some more games at home. So we got another big game tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what I love about games like this, Seth, is when you go back and kind of do you run back through the game. And, you know, the later you get in the game, the more you forget about performances earlier in the game. And we've talked about Javier a couple times. But Rayleigh coming in the second inning for the Astros was big as well. You know what I mean? Like, he came in with a runner on second base. He walked the guy, but then was able to get Hernandez to strike out. And was able to get Devers to fly out to right field. Like, really getting out of a little bit of a jam in the second inning. You forget about it because there's so many twists and turns along the way. I just can't say enough about this bullpen. Like, this might be the most unexpected development of any Astros team I've ever rooted for. That they have been carried by the bullpen. That the bullpen has maybe collectively, like, an 8-headed MVP for this team right now so far in the series. It's been remarkable.
And Javier specifically in this series, the combo punch of Javier and Altuve.
Yeah.
Javier going a few innings, keeping things in line, and then Altuve tying with a home run. That's been a magical part of this specific series. And then Javier, just in the playoffs in general, has been damn good. Let's see. 7 2/3 scoreless frames with 13 strikeouts and 4 walks in 3 appearances. Opponents are batting .115 against Javier.
Yeah.
There's two things in this series that have made it feel extraordinarily bad. When I don't think, despite the lopsided scores, don't get me wrong, it's been bad. But I think it's made a lot of people panic because the bats dried up a little bit for a couple of games, you know, like which happens. And the starting pitching has just been so miserable. Now, the problem is, it's not as simple as just, it's one thing if one reliever here or there gets shelled. When your starting pitchers are getting shelled, and then they can't go again, and then you have no confidence in what they're going to do when they do show up again, like Framber this afternoon, it's kind of a big deal. But the lopsided scores from games 2 and 3 that made it feel, I think, at times, like, insurmountable, it's just last night resets that, I think, a lot. And I don't think the Astros players were – did you feel like they showed any signs of of pressuring themselves too much or
no.
reaching or stretching or anything?
No,
yeah, like
no,
I felt
no.
like they were all pretty composed. If anything, I think a team that's really good at judging the strike zone has been thrown off at times in this series by bad strike zones.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I don't ever get the feeling that this team is pressing. You know what I mean? Like,
pressing's the word I was looking for. Thank
yeah,
you.
Like I don't ever get the feeling with this team. Like, I do feel like they go through some very frustrating lulls as a team that's got so many professional hitters on the team. But that's the nature of a seven-game series. Like, the Astros are a good enough team with enough good hitters on this team. And then the Red Sox, it's not like they're going against the 2019 Astros and that pitching staff. You know what I mean? Like, the Red Sox are a very, very average pitching staff. Over the course of a seven-game series, innings like last night's ninth inning were bound to happen at some point. And yeah. Honestly, Seth, my overall feeling walking out of that game, and I said it before the game last night, I just want to take one of these remaining two in Boston. Like, honestly, even if today, I hope they win today. I hope Framber goes out and gives you six, and then you can get into the Stanix and the Presleys and the Gravemans and whatnot from there. But if they lose today, I still feel okay about the series coming back to Minute Maid Park for game six and seven. You know, like, I don't feel horrible. I'd feel better if they won today, but I wouldn't feel, just get the one so you know you're coming back to Minute Maid Park, and they did that last night.
So this is what they have less than 24 hours after just an awesome performance by some of their relievers. Javier pitched 57 pitches last night.
Yeah, he's done.
He's done. Yeah. Graven pitched 30. He's probably out for this for tonight unless right. there's an extreme emergency. Stanek and Presley both had 22 pitches. Presley had 22 pitches in game four.
Stanek didn't pitch last night.
Stanek didn't pitch. Presley had 22, but he was on 3 days rest.
Yeah.
So that should be no big deal.
And you got an off day coming up after this, too.
Yeah, yeah. And Yimi Garcia didn't pitch in game four.
Yep.
Raley and Taylor would be available. Maton only pitched 11 pitches. So I actually, they're in pretty good shape as long as Framber doesn't implode,
say
right?
It. Yeah, I mean, this. Yeah. Look, the only thing right now that I feel like, okay, there's really not a solution in place is what the hell is going on with this rotation right now?
Well, yeah, and I guess that's a big question. And now it became an open discussion topic because, look, if a pitcher is tipping his pitches, there's nothing illegal about that. For some reason, fan bases explode in anger when anybody suggests that. It's weird. Like, Red Sox fans are getting all sensitive that Astros fans are saying, hey, maybe Urquidy is tipping pitches. Maybe Framber's tipping pitches. Yeah, that's perfectly legal for the Red Sox to figure that out.
Sure.
And take advantage of it. I really hope that they were tipping their pitches and that something's been figured out in the last 24 to 48 hours. The next time we see Framber today and then Urquidy, that they'll have it figured out.
Well, actually, Seth, before the game last night, they caught up with Brent Strom. And Brent Strom actually alluded to some things. They went back and watched the video after game three, and here's what Strom had to say about it.
We always are looking at our own guys, and we notice some things, you know, that the swings they take on certain pitches that raise our suspicions. And it's all perfectly legal on their part. There's no illegality. This is part of the game, and we need to clean up our house a little bit. So, you know, obviously they have the scouting reports on us, and we have tendencies that we need to watch. But perhaps there's some tells in there. I mean, you just got to look at poker players playing poker. There's certain tells that take place sometimes, and perhaps we need to clean up our house a little bit, and get, if that's the case, we're always on the lookout for it.
It was really interesting. I listened to the Roger Clemens interview with Clint Sterner in the show yesterday, Seth. It was really interesting to listen to Clemens talk about tipping pitches. He said just something as simple as where you're holding your glove in front of your face. You know, like on a fastball, guys tend to hold the glove lower. On a breaking ball, some guys tend to hold it higher, and they're covering up their nose and their eyes. Just little things like that. And look, to the surprise of nobody, Brent Strom and the pitching staff probably went back and watched a bunch of video of their tendencies in this series. And I think, to even less surprise, here you come into game four and they only give up two runs over the course of the game. Like, this is a team that's really good at correcting its mistakes. That's why they're in the fifth straight American League Championship series.
I mean, you go back to like Tyler Glass now in 2019 was tipping pitches. Like, this is one of the things that the Astros did very well legally in 2019 was figuring out Chris Archer had been tipping his pitches.
Yu Darvish in the World Series in 2017.
Right, yeah. Right. So all those things, like, that's one of the things. That is one thing I wonder with the Astros. It's weird to ask this question because the Astros' offense was really, really good this year. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if they've lost some of that as some of the veterans have left, like, some of the, like, well, Beltran. As much as Beltran was involved in the illegal cheating, he was also a big part of bringing a lot of the old school legal gamesmanship to the Astros too, in figuring out tipped pitches and all that stuff.
So I like to think, I like to think that that's all been passed down to Michael Brantley. Like, that's when I look at the lineup, I go, that's the guy. He's Uncle Mike for a reason. He's Uncle Mike because he knows exactly what these bastards are doing on the other side, and he's able to share that information legally with all of his teammates. Text message, dude, it gave me chills last night as I thought about those Astros fans that survived the plane crash in Brookshire while our boys showed heart and came back to win. Feels like a World Series victory is only fitting now. Yeah, just to be clear, I don't know. It was a big story yesterday and this morning. It's one of the top trending stories on the Chronicle. A bunch of Astro fans headed up to Boston yesterday, and the plane crashed on the runway in Brookshire. It was a smoldering crash. Everybody survived, just to be clear. One person had to go to the hospital, but it was a nasty, nasty accident scene.
Well, and you can't quite – when you look at the pictures of this – it's freakish because there are 21 people on board. They all got out safely. It turns out two had to go to the hospital eventually.
Okay.
But you look at the pictures, and there's not really a frame of reference. You just see a burnt-out plane. It's completely burnt out. Like, it just, except for the tail fins and the engines, half the engines in the back, it's completely burnt out. But when I first looked at it, I thought, like, okay, that looks like a smaller private jet. This thing is like a... It's an MD-87, which is kind of like a DC-9. When it's in commercial configuration, it seats 110 to 130 people.
Big plane.
This was all pimped out with a bedroom and everything. It's just like a big old, you know, like orgy plane type thing now. Yeah. You know what the rich folks
do. It's an air yacht is what it is.
Yeah, like, this is a monstrous airplane that was headed up with 21 people up to cheer on the Astros. There are still plenty of Astros at the ballpark.
Yeah.
With no reports of violence that I could hear. This has been a relatively civil series.
I think so.
Yeah.
All right. 713-572-4610. Yeah. Shout out to the people on that plane, man. That's I'm glad it worked out the way it did. But the picture, if someone showed you the picture of the smoldering plane and said there were 20 people on this plane, you would have said, man, that is R.I.P. That is a shame. They all survived incredibly. It's wild, man. It is wild.
Sean, let me ask you this. Since we're talking about the Red Sox fans, I know we got to take a break. The bullpen there.
Like, you're not the one who's going to hear about it, Seth. I am.
The Red Sox bullpen. Yeah. I how is that legal? And it was cool. Every time I've seen a shot of it, doesn't look like anybody's harassing Astros pitchers. But we remember they were harassing Gerrit Cole during the one game playoff pretty harshly. And for those of you that didn't notice or pay attention, it's just always astounded me that the pitchers for the visiting team are like 1 foot away from fans with no partition or barrier or anything.
Right.
It's just amazing.
From the most obnoxious fans. Like, this ain't Tampa.
It's the strangest setup. And I don't, like, I'm not, it's just, it's odd to me. It's odd.
Whitney Mercilus now gone. He is a rarity for departing Texan players. We'll tell you why next.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
There was big news with the release of Whitney Mercilus. Can you walk us through that decision and how you plan to compensate for his absence?
Well, what ended up happening is that we've got a lot of depth at that position. Mm. And, you know, Whitney's been around a long time. He's been a big part of what the Houston Texans is all about. And, you know, at this point, with where we're going, we felt like for the best of our football team and for best for Whitney was to be able to move on and give him a chance to be able to hook up with someone at this point and us to move on and get better at what we're trying to do.
All right, that was Vanessa Richardson, KPRC2, interviewing David Culley for their game day show on Sundays on Channel 2. David Culley talking about the release of Whitney Mercilus yesterday and the Texans obviously taking on a lot of cap money to sign Whitney a couple years ago and now taking on a ton of dead cap money to let Whitney Mercilus go. The rare player, Seth, the rare Texans frontline player over the last couple of years to be traded or released, who actually leaves the team with really no animosity from either side. You know, when you go through the departure of some of these players, like you look at the Texans Pro Football Reference homepage for their franchise, like the franchise encyclopedia page, and at the very top of it, it lists in order the top 12 or 13 players by WAR, wins above replacement. For football, baseball people, they do that for football also. Oh, no, maybe they're listing it by approximate value. Some metric that measures
that's what it is.
Who the best players are. It's approximate value. So, you know, obviously, J.J. Watt, number one, and they've got their faces up there. And then, oh, there's Andre Johnson's face, number two, and number three might be Dwayne Brown. Arian Foster is up there. But you get looking at it, Whitney is 10th on the list. So he's 10th all-time for Houston Texans in approximate value. Seth, you go through the faces on there. And it just hammers home something that I feel like you and I end up touching on this every time some player is let go, like when JJ was let go back in February. It's remarkable to think right now, and I think it's unfortunately it's kind of symbolic of where this team is with the fan base as well, that they're a little sideways right now with a lot of their former good to great players. Whitney is the exception. This appears to be something where there is very little, and I don't know why there would be any animosity on Whitney's side. He got paid a king's ransom to play some very average to below average football the last couple of years. But the statement from the Texans that was made yesterday, very cordial on their side. Whitney's little Instagram post yesterday, very cordial on his side. He is the rare longtime Texan who's leaving the team over the last couple of years, who's actually leaving seemingly with good terms on both sides.
This would be, I guess, I don't know if this is interesting to anybody except me and whichever blogger. Maybe this was Patrick Storm that tweeted this out.
Okay.
I hadn't realized that. For right this moment, before Whitney is signed with anybody else, and maybe he chooses not to sign with anybody else, or maybe the offers aren't there, because I think he's, as I just told Larry and Stafford, I don't think it's not like he's a good defensive end, but he's a viable defensive end. Like he's if you plug him in at a reasonable salary or a minimum salary, then I think that's what he's good for right now, especially with his veteran experience, ability to play multiple schemes. But he would be, along with Brian Cushing, the only first-round picks from Texans history to have played for the Texans and the Texans alone.
So thus
Cushing
far, yeah.
Only ever played for the Texans, and unless I'm missing one, Whitney Mercilus too.
Yeah, that's
unless he signs somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean,
I would disagree with you though. I think there have been quite a few guys that have left on pretty good terms, like in that top 10 or 15 or so. Like Jonathan Joseph, I think left on good terms.
Yeah,
Jonathan Joseph was a little bit like Whitney Mercilus. I think he had been better as a player in his last few years, but he was a guy that had just definitely. Father time had caught up with him, and it was time to go.
It sounds like you're looking at the page right now, Seth.
Yeah.
In front of you? Okay, so
yeah.
so JJ, I would say JJ Watt. It's maybe like very surface level cordial. I think it's cordial between Watt and the McNairs. I would say that there's others.
I think it was a genuine mutual parting of the ways.
I agree with that.
Except that it was a good chance. It was a lot of JJ thinking, perhaps. Like if I put myself in JJ's shoes, my insides would be saying like, this is a bad situation,
right?
And this isn't where I want to spend my later years. But I feel like the decision to part ways was probably mutual, but that JJ doesn't feel awesome about it.
Who's second in there? Is it Andre Johnson?
Andre Johnson is second. That was not a pleasant departure.
No, and it hasn't been pleasant the last couple of years either. With
Dwayne
Andre.
Brown wasn't a pleasant departure, right. Obviously. Matt Schaub, number four in approximate value, career approximate value for the Texans. I think that Schaub, it was definitely mutual by that point.
Oh, yeah.
It might not have been an awesome feeling or anything, but it was definitely mutual. DeAndre Hopkins, that was bitterly contested. Arian Foster.
I just don't think Arian Foster cares about football. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think Arian Foster feels bad about the Texans. I don't know if he feels good about the Texans. I think Arian Foster is probably reading a book about Egypt or existentialism right now and not even thinking about football. That's my guess.
Yeah, I don't think it was, or at least he doesn't. He cares about football, but in a different way and with a different perspective.
Not where he's up in his feelings about his former employer type of care. Yeah.
Jonathan Joseph, I think, is probably going to end up working for the Texans at some point. Yeah. If I had to guess.
No, that's a good one, yeah.
Brian Cushing has worked for the Texans at some point. Right. Chris Myers, number nine on the AV list for Houston Texans. He's A-okay with the Texans as far as we know, other than, you know, like any of these guys, there's always going to be some little issue you have with somebody.
Yeah.
And then Whitney Mercilus, number 10.
All right.
Yeah, I'd say about 50-50.
50-50, but the top five, there are issues in that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little top-heavy near the top.
You know
top
who used to play for the Texans who's number 11 on the list?
Who?
Deshaun Watson. He used to play for the Texans.
I'm told he has issues with the team right now.
Yeah.
That's what I hear. I hear reports of that. So, yeah, so Whitney... Whitney headed out on his way to who knows where. If you had to handicap that, Seth, where do you think? Like Kansas City, you were on a station in Kansas City yesterday, you said, that was asking about Whitney Mercilus?
Yeah, Kansas City. Look, Kansas City's defense is just atrocious right now.
Yeah.
And what I told them in Kansas City was, look, you know, I don't know what your guys' defensive line rotation is, but you probably rotate defensive linemen in there. And Whitney is probably – there's a good chance that Whitney is better than – the eighth guy that you're rotating in.
Right.
So if you want a veteran player that you're not going to have to pay a whole bunch, who just wants to go to a championship contender, he's a good guy to have around.
Yeah.
You know, and I think what I called him on that Kansas City show was what happens sometimes to defensive linemen at that age is they're opportunistic playmakers.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're smart and savvy enough to know when, okay, they saw something in the offense. They know what play is coming. Maybe they're matched up against a running back or a tight end, and they get a sack on that play. But they're just not going to be consistently beating an offensive tackle. So you can get some production out of them. It's just not consistent, awesome, like, wow, this guy's beating the doors off of the competition production. But as a rotation player, he's still got value.
Text message, still wondering why Whitney even made the roster if they wound up releasing him anyways. My theory on this... And Seth, I think you thought the theory had some validity when I said it when I shared it earlier this week. Was I think they kept him to see if he still had something left in the tank, and if he did, then he would actually have some trade value.
Yeah.
As it turns out, he didn't really have enough left in the tank to where somebody could justify trading for the rest of his contract, and so they tried it, didn't work, and they move on from Whitney Mercilus.
And it might have been at that point what they probably were hoping was, okay, Whitney's got about $10 million or so guaranteed on his contract, salary guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
They were probably hoping maybe some team would say, okay, look, you guys pay half his salary,
that's
we'll
exactly
pay the
right.
other half.
That's exactly
so
right.
A few people have asked us how come they didn't trade him if the money was guaranteed and the Texans are paying it. If it was just a straight up trade, the new team would have to pay that guaranteed salary. So that was the hold up for why you probably there are teams out there that if they're interested in Whitney, we're thinking like, okay, no, we'll wait until he's cut. We'll sign him for minimum, and you guys can go ahead and pay all that guaranteed money.
Yeah, exactly. All right, 713-572-4610. John McClain jumps in with us at the top of the hour. Let's circle back to the Astros. Huge win last night in Game 4. Brent Strom may have earned all his money in between games 3 and 4. We'll let you hear from Brent Strom, how he did it, and who are we expecting to be available out of this bullpen today. 4 o'clock today, game 5. Be at Kirby Ice House. That's where the afternoon show is going to be. We'll be out there at steak night as well, by the way. But we'll be out there east side between Richmond and Alabama. East Side is the name of the street between Richmond and Alabama. Kirby Ice House, afternoon show today. We'll hear from Brent Strom next.
we really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
So the Red Sox went from burying the Astros under just a sea of runs in games two and three of this series to a game last night where they got a home run from Xander Bogaerts early in the game, and then the Astros shut them down the rest of the way. The bullpen was really, really good. The thought after the games two and three where the Red Sox were putting up crazy numbers was maybe they're tipping their pitches. Like, it's... The pitching's been up and down at times this year, but not like this, where the other team just looks like it looks like a pinball machine out there. Here was Brent Strom, Astros pitching coach, on the work that they put in to maybe find some tells.
We always are looking at our own guys, and we notice some things, you know, that the swings they take on certain pitches that raise our suspicions, and it's all perfectly legal on their part. There's no illegality. This is part of the game, and we need to clean up our house a little bit. So, you know, obviously they have the scouting reports on us, and we have tendencies that we need to watch, but perhaps there's some tells in there. I mean, you just got to look at poker players playing poker. There's certain tells that take place sometimes, and perhaps we need to clean up our house a little bit, and get, if that's the case, we're always on the lookout for it.
And that may have been part of it, Seth. I think about, okay, what does that matter for today? Like, the series is 2-2 now. All that matters now is game five. When I think about Fromber, I'm going, okay, did Fromber get shellacked in his start, or did he just not have any command? And I think with Fromber, it was more like he just couldn't find the plate. You know what I mean? Like, I don't,
yeah.
It's not like the Red Sox were, I'd have to go back and look. I don't remember the Red Sox making just hard contact everywhere against him like they seemingly did against Urquidy, and then who was Garcia in game two, and then Odorizzi in game two as well. Fromber just needs better command in this start today.
You know, with Urquidy early in the game, I thought, oh boy, we're in for something good because the Red Sox were whiffing hard. Mm-hmm. And I almost wonder, so like, if I'm inclined to think that they're picking up something, either by signs or by tipping pitches, that they were wrong maybe, that they were taking some monster cuts based on bad information.
Or they picked it up in the first inning, and then the second inning they were using it and gotten the hell out of there.
Well, because the Urquidy game, that was when there was a lot of gesticulating in the dugout. Like, just guys looking genuinely excited, like maybe they'd figured something out.
Right.
And that's, again, I'll say it. I say it every time I talk about this because people get the wrong idea. It's perfectly legal. That's 100% legal. It's been going on forever. Nobody on either side is claiming anybody of malfeasance. They're just saying maybe the Red Sox are doing a better job at that aspect of the game right now. One of our listeners, John, texted, he was pointing out that, you know, he said Maldonado had a card and would tell pitchers to switch up their signs. Whatever they did, it threw off the Red Sox batters because they were not jumping on those pitches as in games two and three.
Good.
The pitchers and catchers have, they mix up their signs a lot. And that's why Maldonado's gotten crossed up a few times in this series. I think the Astros are appropriately nervous about the Red Sox, especially, and this is, when it comes to sign stealing, again, this would be the legal variety. The fact that the Red Sox have three grand slams, the most by any one team in an individual playoff series ever in the history of baseball, you'd think that, okay, if the Red Sox are excelling at old school sign stealing and pitch tipping, then yeah, when the bases are loaded, they're figuring something out with the signs. And again, it's totally legal. They're just doing a better job at it than us right now, if that's what's going on.
Maybe that is why Correa decided to stop at second base last night in the ninth inning as opposed to taking third base on his leadoff double. He caught a lot of heat for that, Seth, from the announced team, that he wasn't hustling out of the box on his double over the head of Hunter Renfro out there in right field, that, oh, he could have taken third. Maybe he was stopping at second so he could, help out Kyle Tucker and Yuli Gurriel in the next couple of at-bats. You know, it's hard to help out from third base on what the signs are. You know, you park yourself on second, you can see, boom, right in there. Right, you can see right in there to Vasquez's crotch, which is what everybody wants to see. Everybody wants to hang out on second base and look at Vasquez's crotch.
That is, you know what, we were having that discussion earlier about whether Correa should have tried to turn that into a triple, whether it was because he was loafing or what have you. Couple people said, hey, look, the last thing in the world you want is for Correa to end the inning by being thrown out at third if he's trying to stretch that into a triple there. Yeah. He also said he exaggerated a little bit. He said the number one rule in baseball is to not get, what was it, not to get thrown out at third.
Don't get thrown out at third on the don't make the first or third out at third base.
Don't make the first or third out at third base, which is I hesitate to agree that that's the number one rule in baseball.
Seth?
That's not what they're telling kids at Pearland Little League when they show up on day one.
Are you sure?
When they're trying to,
were you there, Pearland Little? Did you play Little League baseball, Seth, back in the day?
Coach, what's a strike? We don't have time for that. I'm going to tell you.
Listen,
the last thing in the world you need to ever get to.
Kids, this square right here is third base. This is the most important base in baseball, and you can't forfeit it on a first or a third out. Rule number one.
This is now. Look, okay, that is an old rule in baseball,
it is,
but I would venture that the Astros do not subscribe to that rule because the Astros are aggressive as hell with their base running.
They sent Brantley home.
Yeah,
no. That was great.
I mean, the times they've sent Brantley or Gurriel home, you know, just in the past couple months would make old school baseball fans shudder. So I don't think that that's their rule. The Astros are going to be aggressive, especially in that situation.
No doubt.
Like, no, we're trying to get one run. We're going to be aggressive as hell. I think Correa at times just, he underestimates the ability of fielders to not make good plays.
Yeah.
Like sometimes there's times when he's running to first where a shortstop bobbles the ball a little bit, and I don't need him to gut it out every single time. But yeah, I think that was a little bit in that moment. If I were Correa, maybe afterwards I'd say, yeah, well, I wanted to play it safe and be sure that I was going to get a double and, you know, give these other guys an opportunity.
There you go. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. John McClain jumps in with us at the top of the hour. Let's take inventory here. Dusty claims that the bullpen, even if Fromber gives you five or six, obviously the bullpen is going to play a part in the Astros trying to take game five today and come home with a 3-2 lead in this series. Dusty claims that, yeah, the bullpen, you think the bullpen's taxed? I don't think the bullpen's that taxed, says Dusty.
We had a fresh Javier. That helped a lot. You know, and then the other guys, and we had a fresh Graveman. The other guys have been pitching a lot, especially our left-handers, both our left-handers and also Stanek. So that was good to give Stanek a day off tomorrow. I mean, today, so we have a relatively fresh Stanek, relatively fresh, Presley. And so hopefully we can call on them late in the game and Fromber can take us, you know, deep in the game.
Okay, Seth, let's take inventory here. I'm looking at the roster right now. Okay, so who is available for Dusty today? Yimi Garcia did not. Miraculously, Yimi Garcia didn't pitch yesterday.
Yeah.
And I say miraculously because Dusty seems to love some Yimi Garcia.
If there's a starting pitcher that's struggling, yeah. Okay, Javier not going to go today, 57
nope.
pitches. Graveman pitched 30, so he's likely out unless there's an emergency.
Unless they go like 13 innings or something like that.
Stanek did not pitch.
He will pitch.
Presley on 3 days rest only pitched 22 pitches.
Yeah.
So he's relatively fresh. Those are Dusty's words, relatively fresh. As you said, Yimi didn't pitch in game four.
Yeah.
Brooks Raley and Blake Taylor I think would both be available. And Maton, old 11-pitch Maton, he's good to go too. So it's not as long as Fromber gets some work done and doesn't leave after 2 1/3 innings. They should be all right.
Let me give you a wild card in all this. Luis Garcia. Luis Garcia. If Luis Garcia, I'm going to assume that Luis Garcia is not going to be starting game six. I don't know if we've heard anything about that. I'm going to assume game six is going to be an Odorizzi game because Luis Garcia is dealing with some sort of knee ailment. But it was, his knee was hurting, but not enough to where he couldn't get out on the mound and pitch. I wonder if you had to get one, you know, you had to get an out at a crucial part of the game. You need a strikeout, something like that. I wonder, because Luis Garcia, Dusty said yesterday before the game, Seth, that both Fromber and Luis Garcia were both available for last night's game, if need be. And I don't think there was any chance in hell Fromber was going to pitch in last night's game. But Dusty, whether it was just gamesmanship or he's being honest, he did say both those guys were available, which would lead me to believe that Luis Garcia, is available today as well. I think that's a wild card in this. So add him to the list.
Does anybody want to see Luis? I want Luis Garcia to be as healthy as possible, as late as possible. Like I feel like that would be an emergency move right this
moment. I do too. I do too.
For a guy that's been, and I don't know, man, can you trust Luis Garcia? He didn't tell the staff about this injury that he'd been working his way through.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they're probably kind of nervous about whatever he's telling them about his current health status.
Yep. Someone says, we never hear anything about Reggie Jackson being part of the Astros. Saw where he gave his Mr. October cap to Carlos Correa. Is that true? I had not heard that story. I know Reggie Jackson works for the Astros. I knew that part of the text was true. I didn't know there was such thing as a Mr. October cap. Well, good for him. Carlos is Mr. October for this team. Him and Jose Altuve, man, they are.
I think he might have been speaking metaphorically there.
Oh, yeah. You think so? Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. I'm taking him literally on that. All right, John McClain jumps in with us at the top of the hour. Let's do some headlines. We're going to talk about Castro anyways. Let's just use it in headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
We always are looking at our own guys, and we notice them.
That is a base hit into center. Correa coming to the plate. Astros take the lead here in game four. Jason Castro delivers.
Not enough of the strike zone. Eovaldi yelling out after not getting that call. And then Jason Castro trying to be the hero for Houston in game four.
All right, so that was Jason Castro. The big hit, they end up winning 9-2. So it fades a little bit, but the big hit with two outs, Jason Castro, a base hit, brings home Carlos Correa, gives the Astros a 3-2 lead in a game where they were trailing for most of the night. A Jose Altuve solo home run in the top of the eighth tied the game at 2, and then in the top of the ninth, Carlos Correa leads off with a double. He is eventually brought around to score by that base hit you heard from Jason Castro. Here is Dusty Baker on Castro coming up huge.
That was a huge hit. You know, there's two strikes. And then we start first ball hitting, but that was a huge, base hit by Castro to give us the lead. But, with this team that you're playing, we wanted to pad the lead we did, And because that one run, might not have stood up, especially in this ballpark.
All right, that was Dusty Baker. Here's Carlos Correa, who was brought around from second base on that Castro base hit, on just how huge that hit was.
We played great baseball. They played great baseball. And then in the ninth inning, Jason Castro, man, I got to tell you, it's not easy coming off the bench on a cold night like that, facing their high-level guys and just delivering for the team. And that was huge. That was a great at-bat by him. And, I'm really happy about him and the way he did it.
All right, so that was Carlos Correa talking about Jason Castro. Just probably the biggest hit of Castro's career, Seth. I don't know. I haven't gone through his game log for his 12 years he's been around Major League Baseball or whatever it is. But that was certainly the biggest hit of the postseason for the Astros. They had to have that game last night. They absolutely. The way the starting pitching is for the Astros right now, you cannot count on them having to win 3 games in a row against the Red Sox.
Well, and the way that game played out, too, is Eovaldi was used by the Red Sox in a moment where I don't know, it felt to me. Were you as shocked as I was when Eovaldi that came out there? It almost felt like Alex Cora thought that was, and maybe this is the way he was thinking that was the kill moment in this series, and that if you just get Eovaldi out there and shut them down and then go ahead and win it in the ninth. I don't know. I didn't get that move, but I'm glad that he did it, and I'm glad that maybe it'll affect some of the decisions or Eovaldi's performance the next time we see him.
You talk about body language sometimes and how, you know, sometimes it matters, sometimes it doesn't. Alex Cora coming out of the dugout to get Eovaldi in the ninth inning after he'd only gotten two guys out and the Astros had batted around and they were in the process of just taking this game and just jamming it in the freezer and saying, this is ours. Alex Cora's body language walking out to get Eovaldi looked like a defeated human being. Head down, kind of like not even like walking confidently, like just kind of clomping out there. Like Cora looked like he knew he effed up. You know what I mean? Like he looked like, man, I am going to get second guessed about this. Now the ripple effect on my decision making for the next two or three games is affected by me, Seth. It'd be one thing if they were leading 2-1 still and he brought out Eovaldi and that's the kill shot to put the game away. They were tied at 2. You know what I mean? Like that's a lot of confidence in your hitters to go and then go take the bottom of the ninth from the Astros closer in that situation.
I think that even if it had worked out, I still would have second-guessed that. You know, sometimes when somebody goes for it on fourth down, you say beforehand, okay, whether this works out or not, I don't like this idea or this was a bad decision. I kind of thought it through in my head there, and when you're tied at 2-2, it just didn't feel like the right moment for you to bring out your best pitcher.
Yeah.
And there are a couple things that they've done in this series that'll be really interesting when you look at the fact that Game 1, they started Chris Sale instead of Eovaldi, their best pitcher, because that just set everything else up to use your bullpen appropriately and whatnot. I think Cora perhaps is trying to be too clever for his own good at times in this series.
Yeah.
And yeah, he'll be crushed for it if they don't when the Astros, Sean.
That's
when
right.
The Astros
That's
take
right.
the series.
That's right. When they take it. Game 5 today, 4 o'clock. By the way, several texts coming in. We appreciate you guys texting in. Apparently, Correa, I didn't see his interview on FS1 after the game. I only saw Altuve's interview. Then I had to go to bed because it was like midnight. Apparently, Reggie Jackson did give Correa his hat after the game in the clubhouse. Yeah, he gave him an actual hat last night. So
it's a literal hat.
Carlos is the new Mr. October, man. Like Carlos is widely viewed around baseball as a dude who, when the lights go on in October, he's that dude. It's fun to see him.
It's Sean. I don't know. I like to say it's his time. That's just my thing.
You do. Do you point at your wrist when you say it?
I point at my wrist. Oh boy, somebody, Michael Schwab on Twitter yesterday pointed out that there was a Red Sox fan pointing at his watch, mocking Correa. He was pointing at an Apple Watch. So a Red Sox fan owned himself by pointing at an Apple Watch as he was trying to mock Correa.
That's funny.
For those of you who don't know, the Astros, the Red Sox were caught using Apple Watches to relay information from the bullpen.
Their scheme was a little more sophisticated than the Astros, who were.
Yeah, we used mirror, just old school. As far as I know, it was a beta cam.
Banging on a garbage can like a bunch of cavemen.
The Astros the Astros were basically filming signs on Betamax, and then they had an intern run the Betamax tape down to the Astros dugout. Then they would play it and watch it, and then bang a trash can.
That's exactly what they would do. 713-572-4610 if you want to text the show. John McClain joins us top of the hour. Let's get to the Texans. Whitney Mercilus cut loose by the Texans yesterday. So another longtime Texan out the door. We'll see where Whitney lands. We'll hear from him about that in a second. But here's how Whitney Mercilus categorized his departure from the Houston Texans.
It's just, as they said, it was a mutual thing where it was just part of ways. And so I'm just looking forward to what's next.
So I don't know if it's mutual. I don't know if Whitney had said, no, I still want to be a Texan. My guess would be that the Texans would have said, well, no, we're ready to move on and we're ready to give some of these younger guys some of your snaps. It'll be interesting to see if Charles Omenihu is one of the younger guys who gets some of these snaps. He's been inactive the last couple games. We shall see. Here's Whitney Mercilus on what he would like the next chapter to look like.
You know, as far as it goes, being with a team that has a chance to make it to the playoffs, to make it to the Super Bowl, to be with a contender, honestly. So that's the direction that I want to go. Get a chance to, you know, as I'm on the back half of my career, you know, put the cherry on top, honestly.
The ones that get brought up the most, Seth, are, you brought up Kansas City. You were on a station in Kansas City yesterday. They're generally viewed, even at 3-3, they're viewed as a team that's going to be in the mix to go to the Super Bowl. I think Arizona gets brought up because that's Texans West. I would say two others to keep an eye on. With any now former Texan, I think Tennessee is one to keep an eye on with Mike Vrabel there as the head coach, former defensive coordinator for Whitney Mercilus, and linebackers coach for Whitney Mercilus, so former position coach. And I would say Baltimore maybe with Anthony Weaver there as a connection. So I would say maybe those two. Although Weaver got the worst version of Whitney the one year that he was the defensive coordinator here in Houston. He got the 2020 edition of Whitney, which was not good at all. But I would say those are two to keep an eye on.
And I think one thing that's flown under the radar a little bit, not that it would have been or should have been a huge story, was that Whitney was playing better this year than he was last year.
Yeah.
If you can visualize Whitney's career, I won't make this overly complicated. I'd say his first 3 years, he was coming along as a younger player who was probably going to be okay as a late first round pick, but nothing special. And then all of a sudden, 2015 through 2017, he really poured it on and was a really effective player. And then you had the third era of his career, which was 2018, 2019, 2020. 2018, 2019, he was an okay player. Then last year, he just fell off a cliff for some reason. And then I think this year he got back up to 2018, 2019 levels. So he's a serviceable player.
Yeah.
And I think teams that have like a playoff contender with a bad defense, which is exactly what the Kansas City Chiefs are, they can upgrade their defense because their defense is so bad. They can upgrade their defense with Whitney because he's a serviceable player at the right salary. The biggest problem with Whitney Mercilus right now, there's two big problems with Whitney Mercilus with the Texans. One, he's old, which doesn't seem to be an issue for guys like Marcus Cannon or any running back on the roster, but he's old and the Texans are focused on youth. And two was that his contract was just absurd. Now, the Texans aren't going to save any money on the contract, but it starts the process of bringing in younger guys, getting all those guys the playing time so you can save the money in the future.
Which player who could potentially now take up some of Whitney's snaps? Whitney was playing about 50% of the snaps, I think, Seth. Which one are you most anxious to see take some of Whitney's snaps now at that position?
Well, okay, it wouldn't be at his position directly. I guess you have eight defensive linemen. They rotate through, and a lot of these guys can play both inside and outside.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Jordan Jenkins was supposedly the reason they put Jordan Jenkins on, or supposedly the reason Amenihu was put down was because they wanted to see more of Jordan Jenkins. So I guess maybe Amenihu?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only guy that wasn't really the two guys that didn't play this last weekend that weren't active on game day were Charles Amenihu. Was it Charles Amenihu, Ross Blacklock because of COVID?
Yeah, and Blacklock because of COVID. Yeah, exactly. Just those two on the defensive line.
So, I mean, that's and we've seen both of those guys so far, and I'm guessing it's just that Blacklock will be active.
Yeah.
They're not gonna replace anybody, or as far as I can tell, they're not bringing anybody in to replace him.
David Culley meets with the media today, as do some of the Texans players. So we'll get reaction to Whitney Mercilus and Andre Roberts being let go. And I would say this would be my advice, Seth, for Texan fans over the next couple of weeks leading up to the trade deadline, which is 2 weeks from yesterday. Is there's a potential for fireworks every day with this team right now when it comes to roster moves. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think, like, to me, I look at this team, I go, there you go, Whitney and Andre Roberts. We're done with our work for the day. Like, I think there's potentially several more guys that could experience a similar fate to Whitney and Andre Roberts, in addition to guys who could get moved in a trade. Like, I think we're on the cusp of a really interesting couple of weeks to be a Texan fan. I don't think we're on the cusp of any good football. Let me just be very clear about that. I think the Cardinals are going to boat race the Texans on Sunday, but I think we are on the cusp of what should be a very interesting couple of Casario weeks here.
Sean, I laughed out loud yesterday when I was on with Clinton's show, and I think Clint asked me something about the Mercilus trade. And I can't remember exactly how he asked it, but he asked if I was surprised. And I laughed because I thought he was joking. Like, there's There's nothing about this team. Like, there is nothing that can happen with this football team that will completely surprise me. I mean, there's zero whatsoever. There's things about the way they handled this Whitney Mercilus situation that don't make any sense, but I'll go back to Bill O'Brien with that and just doling out the contract that they gave Whitney Mercilus back in 2019, at the end of 2019, and Brian Gain, actually. So, or wait, was Gain there? No. No, nothing surprises me. There's going to be big movement. I think Amenihu and Zach Cunningham are the most likely candidates to be doled off or traded off or something, where you wouldn't have thought 3 months ago that that was going to happen by a long shot, but that's very possible right now.
It's the easiest question when you and I are on out of market, which we have been a lot this year because the Texans, for as bad as they are on the football field, they generate a lot of news. It's the easiest question to answer for out-of-market hosts when we're on their shows, because they don't follow this team on a daily basis like we do. Any question that begins with, are you surprised that ... it's the easiest question to answer, because the answer, it doesn't matter what they say. The answer's no. No, I'm not surprised. Like you just said, there's nothing they do that I'm shocked at.
They traded DeAndre Hopkins for nothing.
Yeah.
They traded DeAndre Hopkins for a guy that fumbled once, really might as well have fumbled another time, and then tried to block a phantom pass rusher on a critical down and distance.
Crazy.
In the game last year. David Johnson, who, by the way, yesterday you and I went an entire show talking a lot about DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt facing their old team and how it can have an effect and what have you. I don't think there was a single time where one of us was like, hey, maybe David Johnson ends up having a really good game versus because he's got an axe to grind versus the Cardinals.
No. Yeah. And David Johnson did a public appearance yesterday and was asked about it. He's like, oh, yeah, this one circled on the calendar. I'm like, hey, I'm sure they're quaking in their boots out in Phoenix. you're gonna bludgeon them with those two carries that you get and those lookout blocks for an oncoming blitz. Ay, ay, ay. He seems like such a nice person, too, but oh, my God. All right. By the way, a little news on the front with former Texans, Seth. A couple former Texans finding homes. Benardrick McKinney, who you and I were just doing a little Benardrick McKinney research earlier this week. Is he on a team? He's on a practice squad now. He is on the Giants practice squad. So we're like a year removed from Benardrick McKinney being a highly paid defensive captain for the Houston Texans. He is on the practice squad for one of the worst teams in football right now.
Boy, that was like a low-rent version. The Shaq Lawson for Benardrick McKinney trade, where neither player ends up playing for the team that traded for him. It was like a low-rent version of, who are the first-round players that the Vikings and the Seahawks traded for each other back in the day? Both guys had been busts, and it was like the Seahawks and the Vikings swapped these former first round picks, basically
trash.
Just saying look, this doesn't look as bad if we trade them away
with each other. Let's do each other a solid.
Except that the problem is, in this instance, it was I don't think the Texans realized they were getting a lemon in Shaq Lawson.
Yeah, in this instance, the Texans had to pay Shaq Lawson $8 million. That's the difference. And by the way, Lamar Miller signing with the Saints practice squad. So Lamar Miller
or Anthony Miller?
Lamar Miller. Anthony Miller signed.
Lamar Miller.
Lamar Miller.
Kidding.
Yeah, no, Anthony Miller signed with the Steelers last week.
Yeah, I figured he was on to the Saints now.
He's not Cali wearing, Seth. He's stuck for more than 2 days, all right?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.